Comments made on the Serotalk Podcast Network are those of the individuals and do not represent Serotalk Corporation, its staff, management, board of directors, or third-party resellers.
Hey, how's it going, everyone? And welcome back to episode 2 of That Android Show, the show all about Android, and this time all about ice cream sandwich. Yum. Along with me, JJ Meadow, it's a blogger extraordinaire, it's Anna.
Hi, this is Access Anna from the Accessible Android blog.
And also along with us, our resident Serotalk expert, it's Joe Steinkamp.
Hello, everyone. Back here to talk about phones and fun.
Oh, yes. Lots of fun this time. And we've been holding off on this podcast for one particularly yummy and delicious reason. And that is the announcements and the release of Ice Cream Sandwich.
Yay. It's
so yummy and delicious. And I think it might actually be the most delicious release, especially for us from an accessibility standpoint. We'll have a lot to talk about that. We just go right into it. The press event in Hong Kong. Did any of you guys go to Hong Kong?
I was unable. I had to do it completely by watching on my... this is kind of bad. I had to watch on my iPad. So... but I did watch
you were not the only one, I'm sure.
Well, I've often said that the best of both worlds, I tether my iPad to my Android phone, so I get best of both worlds there. It was a small event. Of course, it had to be rescheduled. Google and Samsung rescheduled shortly after the passing of Steve Jobs.
Quite
and,
respectful.
I think it was a very good move. And it made it more intimate. It didn't have the kind of bombastic feel like somebody was over at the Marconi Center or something like that. And they got up on stage and did a really good job. Had a couple of demo fails. There was one in particular where they have a feature for Ice Cream Sandwich where you can actually unlock your phone by looking into your front-facing camera. And the light and the high-definition makeup couldn't get the guy's face in. But he was making all these faces and running his face back and forth across the camera trying to get it to catch. So that was kind of the highlight. Not that you were shooting for it, but the demo fail kind of caught him. But it was a very neat event, and it was very crafted. You could see, if you've watched Google I.O., if you've watched previous ones, you could see that they're learning from Microsoft. They're learning from Apple and putting together a very good event with some ideas. They wanted you to feel something for your phone. They actually changed their nomenclature a little bit and talked about having a soul or having a connection with your phone, making it personal, which I think is the right message.
They want people to love their Android, not just like their Android. And you're right. I think they're really finally starting to realize that, you know, Google's been around for over a decade now, and it's starting to move from a bunch of engineers who decide to slap lipstick on something and make it look good to something where they're actually now trying to focus on interface and user experience and actually try to also make their products, you know, look as well as they work. Because, you know, we've felt for a long time that Android is a good operating system as far as how it functions, but it is not necessarily the easiest to figure out at first, the easiest to use, you know, visually appealing. It certainly, you know, lacks that of some of the other operating systems. So they're really trying to bridge a lot of that gap, or at least so it seems with this release.
Right. People who have iPhones really love their iPhones. They go on and on about how wonderful it is and how they can't do without them. And people with Android probably like their phones just as much, but it's the relationship isn't quite so personal. It's not my buddy, you know? And so Google is really trying to give the product a personality, and that's nice, and that's what came across in the presentation.
Now, what did not come across much in the presentation was words about accessibility. That scared people for a minute, but, you know, in thinking about it, accessibility is not one of those points. It'd be the big banner selling point for us, but for 99% of the world, that isn't going to be the type of wow factor that you're going to find in a presentation. But
it did come up one time. It was mentioned during the browser portion of the presentation where they talked about that they've increased accessibility in some portions of the browser. Now, they didn't elaborate, but, you know, it was there. You're hoping that one day they'll do, you know, like Microsoft during the Build conference. They spent a good minute and a half talking about accessibility and ease of access. So, you know, if they're going to start emulating more of those other cats, I hope that comes across at some point.
Absolutely. And in the developer notes, they have a little section on accessibility. which I don't remember reading during the launch of Gingerbread. So it's nice that accessibility isn't going to appeal to everybody, but if you look for it, you can find information about it, some information
that's,
about it.
That's quite true. So shortly after the actual presentation, and when a lot of blind people all over the world were just freaking out that nothing was mentioned, then up pops all this developer documentation. Oh, wait a minute, there actually are some major enhancements, some of which we've been asking for a long time, starting with Explore by Touch. Definitely not innovative, but necessary, absolutely necessary if it is implemented correctly. Basically, how it works, this might sound familiar to a few of you. You slide your finger around the screen, and as you do that, the icons and other text that you go over will be spoken to you. And if you double tap, again, I know this is a novel concept to many of you listening, but if you double tap on an item, it will be activated. So, you know, it sounds like we have the beginnings of an accessible touch interface. We don't know what other commands are a part of that, but it does seem like we are getting somewhere with that.
Hooray, since there seems to be more and more phones not coming out with keyboards, and the desire is to, you know, we went from having big phones when we first got cell phones to having the candy bar phone to going back to having big honking phones with 4x3 or 4x6 screens. It's nice that part of that is that there's no buttons. Although there has been some things done with capacitive buttons during the presentation. They showed that they're doing some things with capacitive by touch and hold or long press or swiping on it. So if we do have to lose our buttons, at least they're putting some functionality to it. You're getting something out of the loss of a button.
They're not taking them. I mean, if they're, some of the phones are getting rid of the buttons, but in my understanding, I mean, you're still going to have a home button at some sort, but it's not a physical button.
Right.
But, you know, it's still going to be there. You know, my G2 now doesn't have, you know, the actual physical buttons, but, you know, which seems like, you know, for someone who's never used to that, oh my gosh, no buttons. But if you know where the things are, you know, or, you know, perhaps if, you know, tactile overlays get developed for, you know, various phones in the future, you know, there's certainly possibilities there as well.
Well, if you expand the conversation to tablets, if you look at the Zoom and others, there aren't any. In fact, the Zoom is the first one that jumps up to mind, that there is practically nothing on it in order to get some type of physical feedback. So this would be a great feature for that when you go expanding outwards, because this is supposed to also work on tablets as well as phones.
Right. And along those lines, when the blind community on the Eyes Free list, you know, exploded with there was no reference to accessibility, one of the developers posted a note saying that devices with hardware navigational controllers can be used, but also devices without them. So that means we can choose pretty much any phone we like. It suggests that we can also use a tablet, which to me is very exciting.
Yeah, absolutely. The tablets, I think, are the big question mark at this point. I would love to think that they're going to be accessible. I'm sure there's going to be quirks. You know, there's quirks in all the operating systems. You know, people on iOS are complaining about Newsstand not working and being accessible. But there's a lot of potential there. The built-in web browser is sounding like it's going to be accessible through a scripted language. I'm not sure if it's going to be some form of ChromeVox or maybe some of you guys have seen a little more on that, but it seems like there's at least going to be some sort of solution cobbled together. That not only helps the web browser, but a lot of applications have what we call web view, where they use basically an embedded web layout to display information, and that currently is not accessible. So it sounds like that will also be fixed. So that will actually increase
Very
access
exciting.
To a lot of apps.
Yes.
A lot of your informational type apps.
There was also talk of unifying gestures throughout the operating system so that you wouldn't have to memorize these gestures over here. And then when I'm in this app, I got to do this. And then when I'm in this app, I got to do this. And so there was a lot of talk of unifying commands and gestures that benefit us. It wasn't just for those who are handicapped. It was also for the general user experience that Google has realized that sometimes leaving it open to everybody can cause a little bit of chaos and can cause the new user experience to be confused, like JJ was saying earlier. So it was nice to hear also that they're trying to pull some things across. And they demonstrated that with, if you get a call, swipe up, you could send it directly to, you know, Google Voice, or you could send somebody a preset number of texts. So if you got a call in from say JJ, you could swipe up and say in a meeting, because you could already have that kind of sort of programmed out. So it would send that call directly to voicemail, but then text that person that pre-canned set of information, which I think is awesome. That is a neat feature.
Yes. one of the text messaging apps, third-party text messaging apps, I think it's SMS Composer, has a similar feature, and it's very, very nice. So I'm glad that this is part of the operating system itself. Very convenient.
Oh, I want to get into that for a second before we leave that discussion. There were a lot of features that they took from Launcher Pro and Instapaper.
Cyanogen.
Yes, absolutely. The Instapaper one is the one that really jumped out, was that you could bookmark a site, but also send it directly to your phone to review later within the new Android browser. So, you know, again, it seems like they were kind of harvesting the cream from the crop of those out there who are making some really interesting things. What do you guys think about that? Do you think that that's a good thing or a bad thing? Is it copying, or Apple does this too, by the way, take some very popular features from other apps and then incorporate them in? Is it just increasing the user experience, or?
Absolutely. You know, that's always been the attitude of the operating systems, you know, going all the way back to Microsoft buying out whichever company they feel can, you know, help out Windows with their software. You know, sometimes you could try to spend all day and a night trying to create your own solution to half mimic what's already out there, but if you can't beat them, join them sometimes. And, you know, the operating systems would probably represent the best of what's available and try to bring the best user experience possible. So, of course, I would definitely expect that a lot of those ideas would come from the outside. And you see that on most operating systems and the way they borrow from each other. And that's just fine. But my worry, I guess I shouldn't say worry, because, you know, I am being more surprised pleasantly over the recent months. But my cautious optimism is to see how these new features that are being implemented, you know, is accessibility being considered? Or again, are we going to have to have Band-Aid solutions later on? It sounds like a lot of that might be changing. And if it is, I'd be happy to see it.
Yes, absolutely. I think that Google is listening, obviously, to make more money and to bring in customers, but they're still listening to what users are liking, what apps people are using, what features they seem to rave about. And so I like that those are incorporated into the operating system. And I hope that translates into their attitude toward accessibility, noticing what people seem to be wanting and liking, and trying to build that solution into the OS rather than tacking it on later. So for me, this particular upgrade is very, very exciting.
You know, their accessibility team, just looking at the IS3 lists and people who represented them on, you know, at presentations and Twitter, we're seeing more and more names pop up. So, I mean, there's at least, I can't even speculate on a number that are on their team, but there are quite a few now at Google that seem to be working towards the accessibility experience in some way. And that's quite, and then the message that came through the other day, that was another person from Google that I had not heard from before, but it apparently has a lot to do with accessibility. So,
right. When I joined the IS3 list, I joined it in the middle of the summer of 2010, and only one or two, maybe three names seemed to be connected to Google. And now I would say it's at least a half dozen, maybe more. And so that's exciting, too. It suggests that more bodies are working on it and that accessibility is taken.
And they're at least reading
serious.
The mailing list, too. They don't have to do that.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And it's showing up on the blogs as well. There have been articles specifically outlining some accessibility changes, and I/O had its own accessibility track. So for those who are really looking for this information, it is out there. And developers are actually starting to share that information as well. I've seen MediaFly actually changed not only what they did for Google and Android, but for iOS as well. I got into a great conversation in Twitter and approached MediaFly, and they've made some changes and learned a lot about TalkBack and VoiceOver through just that dialogue, approaching the developer and saying, hey, you know, if you just did this, this, and this, man, that would make my experience with your app so much better. And I've seen that a lot lately too, that's coming from other places outside of Google in the app developer community.
Yeah, they're really starting to hear about it a lot more, which is really good to see. As far as accessibility functionality, one of the features we did not mention yet is another long-awaited one that we've been talking about, the apparent ability to be able to turn on accessibility features without sighted assistance. This was probably the other biggest sticking point as far as Android phones and taking one home from the store and being able to turn it on by yourself. Now, the gesture, I don't know, it's an interesting, perhaps a little complicated gesture. What are we calling it, a clockwise square, I guess?
A squircle. Yeah. No, wait, that was Zune. Sorry.
whatever works. It seems to be there, and if it works as advertised, then we have our answer.
Well, it sounds easy enough. I mean, you draw a square starting at the upper left-hand corner, left to right, then down, right to left, then up. So, it sounds like it's easy, and it sounds very exciting. So let's hope it works. You know, gestures are kind of an odd thing, but Google's been very good with the Eyes Free Shell and with other apps where you can touch anywhere on the screen and the phone knows this is the starting point. So I'm confident that it'll work well, and this is a very exciting addition.
Good point.
We also have... Roboto? What is this?
Yeah, that is so true. That's a new typeface interface, and it was the first thing they showed. And it was interesting because I was listening to Twit's coverage of it and all about Android. And we have links to both of those, the special coverage that they did over at Twit and also the episode that followed afterwards where they talked about this and the new phones we're going to talk about in a minute. But they were kind of puzzled about why open this up about Roboto. And then as they kept showing more and more of the interface, the text played more and more into the experience. And for low vision users who are going to use pinch and zoom, it's a very crisp and clear way of looking at text on a various number of displays. Because with Apple, you get one type of display unless you're using the Retina. So you've got iPad ones using the Classic, but you do have, you know, the newer iPhones that are using the Retina displays. With Android, you have LCD, OLED, and about 15 other different types of screens out there. So they found text, that font, that looks very good across multiple devices and also supposed to scale well within tablets. So again, we're back to that unifying the experience, the trying to combat fragmentation. And it seems to benefit in some of these apps, and especially with the new keyboard. There's a new keyboard that comes across in Ice Cream Sandwich that also uses this interface, and it is crisp and clear and easy to see from what I've seen in screenshots so far. Of course, we're all looking very forward to playing with this. The SDK has been made available in case you're a developer or an enthusiast and want to go learn more about Ice Cream Sandwich. Understand that there's going to be some hardware limitations that you're going to need some pieces of hardware in order to make that work a little better or in order to get some of the features to work correctly.
Someone has created a virtual device, I believe, as well that does have the accessibility built in, and that's, you got to be an uber geek if you want to play with this, but it is out there at this point.
There are people doing reviews. We've seen a couple on Twitter.
Right. And a related note about the fonts, it sounds like in Ice Cream Sandwich, the fonts can be enlarged across the system. So for low vision users, that's a very exciting feature.
There's also a zoom feature of some sort where you should be able to zoom in on part of the screen. So one of the possibilities that if it works right, it would be interesting to see if you can do the zoom features along with the screen reading features, because I know that's been a limitation at times of iOS. And yes. Some low vision users prefer to have speech and low vision features going at the same time. So it'll be interesting to see how those play with each other.
Yeah, it's funny you should talk about that. I remember Mobile Speak having that and some others, and I used to have to explain to people that magnifying a 3-inch screen does not necessarily give you what you want because it's still a small screen. And so you may possibly get your number faster if you listen through speech than trying to track across on a small screen, you know, a 6-digit number at 6x. You know, that just, right. No. As okay, I've got the first 3 digits, so I got your area code. Let me go and dial that. Okay, now I got the other 3 digits. Let me go memorize that and dial that. And no, there's sometimes limitations of these devices, and that magnification feature would be better on a tablet than somebody trying to rub their nose up against their screen to make out whether that's a 6 or a 9 on a phone. But that's just my personal belief. Sorry, I don't want to go there. I'm sorry. But I did.
Right. Absolutely. There's a lot more to talk about with Ice Cream Sandwich, and then we'll come back to this a little bit later in the podcast. But first, why don't we throw over to Anna, who's going to tell us a little bit about some more great apps that she's found.
This summer, Lifehacker posted a list of 30 must-have Android apps guaranteed to turn our phones into powerhouses. We decided to check these apps out for accessibility, and we found that about half were accessible. For most of these apps, there are accessible alternatives. We can help make more of these apps accessible by testing them ourselves and contacting the developers with specific suggestions. The 30 apps are divided into the following categories: productivity, internet/communication, location aware, utilities, media, food and entertainment, art and photography, and extended pack, which are just a couple of extras. Let's start with the productivity apps. 1. Evernote. I was unable to test this information syncing and sharing app because I couldn't get past the captcha during registration. This isn't a good sign, but it doesn't mean the app is inaccessible. Often the login process is the most inaccessible part of an app. 2. SpringPad. This app for taking notes, web snippets, and audio recordings and saving them for future reference is not very accessible, mostly because most of the commands ultimately lead to a web view. 3. Astrid. This to-do list organizer and manager is probably accessible, since most of the controls are properly labeled and focusable, but the UI isn't very intuitive to screen reader users. Learning to use the app would probably require some trial and error. 4. Mint. This app for managing money and finances is not accessible, mostly because fields and controls are not focusable or properly labeled. Moving on to the internet/communication category. 5. Dolphin Browser HD. This web browser is not accessible. The only web browsers known to be accessible are Ideal Web Reader by Ideal Group and Accessible Browser by Code Factory. 6. Google Voice. This app for managing voicemail, SMS messages, and low-cost or in some cases free calling options is reported to be fairly accessible by some members of the Eyes Free Android users list. Twitter for Android. The stock Twitter app is not accessible because the tweets themselves are not spoken. More accessible alternatives are Seismic and Swift. Tweetcaster is reported to be accessible, but cited help is needed to sign in and authorize the app. 8. Google Plus. Google's new social networking app has hit and miss accessibility. If you sit patiently with it for a day or two, you learn how to perform basic tasks. But if you leave it for a week, you need to relearn where you touched the screen to activate unfocusable controls. The next category is location aware. 9. Google Maps and Navigation. Navigation, which gives turn-by-turn guidance, is very accessible and self-explanatory. For a list of directions, wait for the guidance to begin. Press Menu and press the selector on More, then on Direction List. Maps, which does the same while also displaying a map of the area, is also accessible, but there are a few tricky spots. To get directions or guidance, launch the app, press Menu, and press the selector on Directions. Give the phone a moment to load the screen. Then type your endpoint and check the box for the type of directions you want. For example, driving or walking. At this point, you're ready to start guidance or a list of directions. To start guidance, press the selector on the unlabeled button next to Get Directions. To scroll through a list of directions, press the selector on Get Directions, then touch the lower left-hand corner of the screen, something which takes a little practice. 10. Recall. This to-do list and task management suite, which requires users to set up an account, is reported to be quite accessible by a member of the Eyes Free users list. Now for the utilities category. 11. Titanium Backup. This comprehensive backup utility is reported to be accessible by some members of the Eyes Free users list. 12. Dropbox. This file syncing and backup app is completely accessible and easy to use. 13. Swipe. This virtual keyboard is not accessible. The only standalone keyboard known to be accessible is TalkBack and Mobile Accessibility. Each include an accessible virtual keyboard. 14. Tasker. I was unable to test this Task Automator app because I had trouble downloading the free trial version. 15. Voice Search. This virtual assistant is mostly accessible, but it's got a few quirks. You can say, call Wendy, email Frank, get directions to Starbucks, search for sock knitting patterns, and text Cecile. The biggest quirk is that the screen reader speaks when you are supposed to. To silence it, either use a headset or place your hand over the proximity sensor right before you launch the app. Once the phone gets used to your voice, it often correctly interprets what you say, even if you're speaking over the screen reader. When emailing or texting someone, you don't have much time to say the actual message, so you need to press the selector on an unlabeled button to speak each additional sentence, remembering to speak punctuation, of course. When searching the web, results are returned in the stock browser, which is not accessible. The workaround is to bookmark the results page, then access that bookmark from your accessible browser. Not very convenient. 16. File Expert. This file management and browsing tool is quite accessible. Going on to the media category. 17. Google Music Beta. The current incarnation of the stock music player is partially accessible when the phone is held in portrait orientation, but difficult to use when in album mode, which is the default view when the phone is held in portrait orientation or with the slider keyboard extended. For the much more accessible music player of days gone by, download Android Music by JTR Studio. 18. Pandora. This custom radio station app is reported to be quite accessible by members of the Eyes Free Android Users group. 19. Kindle. This ebook reader for Amazon content is, not surprisingly, not accessible. Most controls are labeled and focusable, but none of the content is read out loud, not even for books that are TTS-enabled. 20. Mobo Player. This alternative music player is completely inaccessible. 21. Dog Catcher. This podcatcher is reported to be accessible by a number of members of the Eyes Free Users list. 22. Spotify. I wasn't able to test this music streaming and downloading app because I couldn't log in. I'm not sure if the problem was me or the app. Now for food and entertainment. 23. Foursquare. This social networking app that lets you tell people where you are is reported to be fairly accessible by a number of Eyes Free Android users, though there may be a few hiccups in more recent versions. 24. Netflix. This movie watching app is completely inaccessible. 25. Yelp. This app for finding new places to eat or something to do in your area appears to be quite accessible. I only tested it for a short while, but all of the basic tasks I tried were completely accessible with TalkBack. The two remaining categories are art and photography, i.e. camera apps, and extended pack, i.e. additional Twitter apps and additional virtual keyboards. I didn't test any of the camera and photography apps because I don't have any vision. The stock camera app is good enough for a blind person to snap a picture and send it to someone for help, say in the case of exploring a new vending machine. To take a picture, simply launch the camera app by going through the home screen or by pressing the hardware camera button. Then press the hardware camera button to actually take pictures. You'll hear the traditional camera shutter sound. If you don't have a hardware camera button, you can try Camera Magic, which is an app with labeled and focusable controls. Twitter and virtual keyboards were covered earlier, so I won't go over them again. If you've tried any of these apps or something similar,
please post a review on www.androidaccess.net or write a tutorial and submit it to accessibleandroid.blogspot.com. Also, we'd love to hear about the must-have apps on your phone. Please drop us a line or give us a ring.
Do you ever feel like your sleep patterns are different from the rest of the world? If you are totally blind, this could be due to a real sleep problem related to a lack of light needed by your body's internal clock. Now you can take a sleep survey and learn more about an ongoing clinical research study. If you think you might be affected, call toll-free 1-888-389-7033 or email info@non24registry.com. That's info@non24registry.com.
And welcome back to episode number 2 of That Android Show. We're very pleased. The ratings are great. We have not been canceled after one episode, so I guess we're doing all right so far. And we do really appreciate your comments and feedback. We're going to listen to some iReports a little bit later on in the show. We appreciate your comments at thatandroidshow.com or leave us an iReport. We also have That Android Show on Twitter. So we'd definitely love to hear your comments and feedback about this or anything related to Android. We are the Android people, or we like to think so. So do let us know what you think. A lot more going on with Ice Cream Sandwich. We've barely scratched the term for the outer part of the wrapper. That's what I'm looking for. Of the sandwich.
The delicious cookie outside.
But there's a lot to the middle, and then perhaps is more important to us even, is the inside of the ice cream sandwich, or the guts that's going to be of use to programmers and developers like Code Factory or like Nolan doing Spiel. There's a lot of new functionality in the developer kit for Ice Cream Sandwich. It has to do with being able to examine parts of the screen, get information about what's currently on the screen. So basically some sort of a review mode would be possible. This opens up a lot of possibilities where before, when you wanted to try to get information about the screen, there was no way for a screen reader to do it. It wasn't Code Factory's fault or anybody else's fault that they couldn't provide a better screen reader for Android. It was that Google didn't offer them that ability. That seems to all be changed now, and there seems to be easy ways for one to query parts of the screen, which seems to open up a lot of new opportunities.
Agreed. And I think, again, as we get to learn more about these tools and the Open Accessories Initiative that was mentioned at Google I.O., I think we'll start to see more hardware devices talking to Android and learning more about Android. It does seem like there is an attempt to try and fix some of the things that critics have thrown down as being the, I will never touch this device because, you know, the following. Insert comment here. But I think, again, you know, what we have is also some fragmentation. If we look at what's coming, like let's take, for instance, the new Samsung phone that was also announced at this conference, that phone is going to have Android 4.0 first. And even the other phone that was mentioned recently, the new Motorola Razr, that one doesn't get it until Q1 of next year. And who knows when ice cream will roll down and melt onto your phone of choice on your carrier of choice. So
or
what
if
we have,
it will.
That's true too. Absolutely. So what we have is a real interesting kind of war going on, right? So you have people who are just now coming out of their 3GS contracts and looking at 4S. You have some people who started with, say, Android 1.6. You know, the very first early versions of TalkBack and are now coming into this, having to make a, you know, kind of a decision. Do I stay on one platform? Do I choose another? It certainly isn't a matter of carrier anymore. It used to be, oh, I'm AT&T, so that's pretty much it. You know, Verizon has it. Looks like Sprint's going to have the iPhone. So some people are having to make some really strange decisions based on cost, based on effectiveness. And even the free phone, if you look at it, that there's a free 3GS, which I don't think is a great idea because the 3GS is just going to get left in the dust with any new iOS enhancements. You know, there's still people are going to do it because my friend has one and everybody else has one, so I should have one.
And it's free.
Yeah, exactly. I'd argue with free, right? And so we do have an article here from Lifehacker that talks about how you can get a lot of the ice cream sandwich features without having ice cream sandwich. And I think that's important too, because that's one of the benefits of Android, is that you can get a lot of these features without having to move up, or if you're not able to, maybe you're locked into your contract. So there's a lot of third-party applications that we talked about a moment ago that Android is borrowing from or giving a loving homage. And so you can get some of those features without having to break the bank or get into a new contract or buy yourself a new phone. So we encourage you to run over and read this article from a Lifehacker, which is in our show notes at www.thatandroidshow.com.
And back to changes to the API, I'm not a developer, so as I read the material, a lot of it went over my head. But one thing that stood out for me is that Android 4 should be able to connect to printers and other hardware devices. While that's not exciting as far as Braille support at this time, what it suggests to me is that the way is being paved. Perhaps in a couple of updates, we'll have Braille support and we'll have the ability to connect to a hardware Braille display. So that's exciting. It's the seeds of the future in my mind.
It's interesting that you mentioned that. I think the right developer with the right mindset, you know, someone like Mark Mulcahy, should be able to, might have the tools now to make it work. It's the biggest thing they didn't have was a way to review the screen. So when you're using a Braille display, you can hardly move around. Now, it appears that Orion has found a temporary way around this for their initial release, because they are still saying they're going to have Braille support, but their phone was also going to be based on Gingerbread. So are they going to stick with that? Are they going to try to move straight away to Ice Cream Sandwich, or are they going to make that a software update in the near future? That's questions that we won't have answers to for a little while. But, it might be possible now, considering, the Bluetooth support that is there. It would be great. It would be awesome if any Braille display would pick up the Wi-Fi Direct support, which is basically a longer range kind of homogenization of Bluetooth. It would be really cool if one of them would jump on that bandwagon, so that would give you increased range there.
Right.
There's a lot of ifs, a lot of questions, but we're going to find out more over the next month or two. The phone situation is definitely interesting. Like you said, you can't even, depending on what provider you're with, it doesn't matter. It's just crazy. There's so many options. There's so many phones. And, people call us up and try to ask, which phone should I get? That's not how much time do you have for me to explain? There's newer options for more carriers. There's a QWERTY phone that just came out for Cricket. I know Metro PCS has a couple. So that is definitely some options that are out there for people who don't want to go with the big boy carriers and they want to maybe do the prepaid thing. So there are more options out there even now that you might be able to consider for some of these smaller carriers. And, Ice Cream Sandwich is going to be a huge improvement. For now, Gingerbread, does offer a lot of accessibility, as we talked about in the past. So if you want a phone now and you don't want to wait 3 or 4 or 6 months for Ice Cream Sandwich or something new, most of the phones, or at least it's my understanding, that the phones that have come out with Gingerbread will have an Ice Cream Sandwich update. That's not a guarantee. That's a pretty qualified rumor. I'm not sure
if
you guys
remember
have heard on that.
Google I/O saying 18 months from the phone launch, if your carriers allow, if your manufacturer is supporting, if it is not the third month of every year beginning with R. It's one of those where they had a lot of outs
where they
could say, look, you could get it, but they also didn't definitively say it would happen. Certainly, if you have a Motorola phone, your chances of getting the update have substantially gone higher since Motorola and Google. Google is moving to purchase Motorola Mobile. And so that will make a big difference on whether you're doing that. And it's certainly one of the things you should think of when trying to decide, oh, that Droid 2 is really cheap, or oh, that Droid 3 just came down in price at Verizon right about the time they announced the iPhone. How interesting that there was an Android sale at Amazon on Motorola phones. So if you're making that decision, you're having to make that coin flip in the air now. At least you know that there are some newer phones that are going to give you that.
Yeah, and some of those older phones, it's kind of funny to call a G2 an older phone, because that's only been out for a year. You know, that's one of those that's right on the cusp. You know, if we're lucky, we'll probably get ice cream sandwich. It seems like the type of phone that would get it. It's a Google branded phone, but that's right on the edge of that 18 months already. You know, time flies really fast.
Isn't that funny that it's 18 months and a contract is 24? How interesting. <That's>, somebody's good at math.
Yep, you think they need to do a little better job at that. Absolutely. The 3GS, well, see, there's a balance there, though. You know, we say, ooh, we should be, you know, keep pushing out updates, but, you know, run iOS 5 on a 3GS and you realize why that's not always the best idea. It's a little sluggish. You know, people, it's not necessarily the best user experience. So, you know, sometimes the way phones are moving at this point is as fast as the features are evolving, you're going to have to upgrade every so often. It's kind of like computers were 10, 15 years ago, where you had to, you know, buy new ones every year or two to keep up. And now it's kind of slowed down tremendously.
Right.
And that's the same thing will happen with phones.
You hit a thing right there I want to hit on, is that there is fragmentation in iOS. There's this, you know, we don't want to get into this comparison thing because that's not what our show is about, but it is important to note that there is fragmentation on every platform, be it BlackBerry, be it Nokia, and what was happening with Symbian. It's out there if you're, you know, not paying attention to it. It's just that it's not very overt in Apple land, but there is some big differences, being one of those Siri. You know, for right now, Siri is rolling out on the 4S, so that is kind of the dividing line between a feature and the particular phones that have happened. Of course, rumors now that Siri is going to be able to be backported, but, you know, at the moment, that was kind of the differentiator that Apple had laid down to say, this is why you must upgrade. And it is important for people to understand that, you know, these companies make money off of the hardware, not necessarily Google. Well, they will now that they have Motorola coming into the fold. But, you know, Apple's design is to sell you a hardware device that every so often. So they need to make that attractive. In Android situation, the problem is that there's always a new device around the corner. There's always going to be, you know, that phone coming in a box of breakfast cereal that you want. You know, it's just, you know, oh my God, that one? And that's what's so neat and exciting about being a Google enthusiast, is that you don't have to wait next year for the iPhone whatever. You know, you don't have to speculate. You know, in about 3 weeks to a month, you know, somebody's coming out with a newer, better, stronger handset, and you can be very excited that whenever you decide to choose, you're going to have a very good experience, because it just tends to get better as the hardware increases.
It's like the old Time Life, you know, book of the month club. You know, we'll send you the book for 30 days. You try it out. If you don't like it, send it back, and no charge for you at all.
Exactly.
And speaking of Siri, that's the latest and greatest thing that people are all abuzz about, and that's the thing that's supposed to make the iPhone better than Android. But we all know that Android has had voice recognition and apps comparable to Siri for quite a while, and that's what we're going to be reviewing this month.
We'll do that right after this break.
My name is Meera Batra. I have been in this country 32 years, and this is how I live united. America has always been the land of promise, and in my community, many families have come for a better life. Coming from another culture myself, I know the desire to become part of a community, to feel at home, and to gain the tools for our children and families to succeed. So I advocate for these families with United Way. United Way empowers them to look beyond their histories and to see what opportunities are available. We help them get involved with their kids' schools, network within the community, and when we do, we unite them. We make the community stronger. What I do is something I wish someone had done for me, and I am so grateful I am able to. My name is Meera Batra. I help families see opportunities and succeed. I don't just wear the shirt, I live it.
Give, advocate, volunteer, live united. Go to liveunited.org, brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Are you looking for information about electronics?
Man, my iPhone!
Hardware?
Useless piece of plastic!
Software?
System access is ready. Oh boy.
Find it all on the Serotalk Podcast Network.
And welcome back to the second installment of That Android Show. And before the break, Anna started to talk to us a little bit about Siri and how Android already has some pretty decent alternatives for Siri.
Well, the two that I use most often are the Ice Free Shell and Vlingo. One of the features of the eyes-free shell is that you can do a simple voice search. So if you stroke to the 9 position, the phone clicks softly and you can say something like 2 plus 3 and it'll say 5. Or you can say weather Austin and it'll tell you, or time Seoul, Korea, it'll tell you. You can do mathematical conversions, pounds to kilograms, for example. So for that kind of information, the eyes-free shell is great.
If you're familiar with Google searches, and if you know the questions that you can ask Google, like translate and things like that, that's kind of your key point for using the voice search in eyes-free shell. So anything that you could type into that Google line at google.com, eyes-free shell is doing the same thing. And if you say search for so-and-so, it will actually go search for that and it'll bring it up in a regular browser. Your searches. So if you're low vision, you might be able to use that to do some of your searching quickly with voice commands.
The other app I use is Vlingo, and it works really well for me. When you open the app, there's a button that says speak. Press the selector on that, and I can say, text Cecile, how are you? I'm testing an app. After a moment, you'll hear a series of tones, and you can scroll through the edit box with the text of your message, and you can also move to a send button. I also use it to call people. I can say, call Frank, and I can get his home number and his mobile number, so I can press the selector on the call button. It works really well. It does. These voice apps do take a little while to get used to. The phone apparently needs to learn your voice. So the first 20 or 30 times you use it, results are really bad. But the more you use them, the better the results are.
Now, have you had any issues? One of the things I've noticed when playing with some of these apps is sometimes when the Google Voice search box pops up, my screen reader starts to try to speak it, and then the voice search hears that instead of me, and that might be more of a problem with certain screen readers than others. I'm not so sure.
I've tried the app called Voice Actions, and I had a problem with that. I haven't used it in a couple of months, so it's possible that this has been fixed. I think I heard on the eyes-free list that there have been some updates to that. Usually what I do in those cases is, as soon as I press the speak button or whatever it's called for on that particular app, is touch the proximity sensor or wave my finger over it. And that
I do the same.
That usually works, but it's not foolproof. I think that works a lot better for mobile accessibility than for spiel and talkback, but it you can do it. It just takes some practice.
You can plug in your headphones, I guess, too, and that would alleviate it from hearing the speaker. So, yeah, the stuff is there. Is it as polished as Siri? Yeah, you know. But there's some new things coming out. And of course, now that people are seeing Siri, of course, there's going to be a million more alternatives now that this is being brought to the forefront. Joe, you got one called Iris?
Yeah, I got this one from watching the guys over at Twit. They're playing with Iris, and it's using some of the back-end stuff that Siri is using through Wolfram.
That's Siri backwards, by the way.
Exactly, and I think that was intentional. It's an alpha right now. So if you go to the Android market and search for Iris, it will openly tell you that they're working on it and that it's not beta yet. It's very simple to set up. I've had some pretty good usage with it so far. It's interesting because, again, that's more of the decision engine more than it is like with eyes-free shell when we're doing just, you know, what is 2 plus 2 or something like that. This is more of the Iris, I love you kind of stuff that you're seeing with Siri, or the what is the meaning of life. In fact, it gives the same answers. So you're going to see a lot of me toos in this because if it's a selling point for somebody, then everybody wants to do it. My mama used to say, nobody wants to be first, but everybody will kill to be second. And that's what we're going to see here is a lot of apps integrating voice or moving things into it. And an alternative, you know, keyboards and alternative gestures and facial recognition and all that seems to be the new virtual reality. You know, in the 90s, everything had to be virtual reality. You know, now we seem to be having this thing where I can talk to my device and it could do all this other stuff. And of course, there's still dictation and mobile accessibility too.
Yes.
So you could talk out.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that is quite well integrated, as we've talked about before, as far as just having to do one hotkey and be able to do voice commands basically from any text edit box on the entire phone, whether it's inside Mobile Accessibility or not. So that, I mean, that's still there as well. So most of Siri is there. It's just in three or four different spots. So it'd be nice to see a little bit tighter integration. But you mentioned Iris. And again, that's one of the things I just love about the Android market. We don't have to wait 2 weeks for some new alternative to be approved in our app store. Hey, you know, a day after iOS 5 comes out and Siri comes out, someone threw an app up and it's on the market already. And as changes get made, you know, we get those right away. We don't have to jailbreak, or we don't have to do anything special to get new programs as they're being released. We don't have to
or
wait
buy a,
weeks.
Or buy a new phone like i4s or something like that.
Absolutely. So there's a lot of them. There's another one called a Speak to an Assistant that's also in the beta. And a lot of these developers are actively looking for feedback. So it's probably worth our time to email a couple of these to make sure they're aware of the accessibility issues and, you know, make sure things are working well for us. And we should be able to have some quite good voice assistants over the coming weeks and months.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And back to the dictation. If you use the TalkBack keyboard, you can also use their on-screen mic button to dictate your emails and text messages, which works well. And it's similar to the one on the feature on Mobile Accessibility. The one on Mobile Accessibility is a little smoother and quicker to use, I think.
Right, the way it does the way it reads back to you, right. The things that you said in your results and things like that.
Right.
But definitely be interesting to hear your feedback. Is Siri the, you know, is that such a great feature for iOS? Is that something that we should be, you know, scared of or trying to, you know, find a good solution for? Is that really just kind of an overblown, you know, glitz visual thing, kind of like the face to unlock thing is for Android? You know, every operating system has them. But I'd be interested to hear your feedback, especially through iReports and through the thatandroidshow.com and also That Android Show on Twitter. We've been getting a lot of feedback from you guys already on the last episode, and we really appreciate it. Why don't we go through some of that and see what you guys have to say?
Okay. Up first, let's listen to a couple of iReports. Let's listen to one from Ben.
Hello, this is Ben calling from Spokane, Washington, and I just wanted to call to let you know that I listened to the first installment of That Android Show, and I just think it's really cool that visually impaired people are using Android devices out there. You know, I am an Apple user to the core, but I just think it's really cool to see people using other devices out there. So anyway, I just really like the show and keep up the great work.
And we have another one here from Tom Schill. Let's listen to Tom. He has a question for us.
I'd like to express congratulations to Joe and JJ and Anna for a great That's Android Show. Great podcast. I got a lot of information out of it and really enjoyed listening to the program, and will continue to do so. Keep up the good work. I do have a question for the panel. Are we getting to a point where we will see Braille support for Android phones? Is that going to become a reality sooner or much later? What are your thoughts on that? I would appreciate your input on the next show, and thanks so much for listening.
Thanks for the question. We sort of touched on it. At this time, there is still no Braille support, but I'm hopeful that in a couple of versions, we may have something like that.
We also got some things from Twitter. We have one that we'll hear from Niber Jaber, who, oh gosh, I hope I pronounced that right. If I'm not, please, it's just me and my mispronunciations. They wanted us to talk about SpeakToid Assistant, which we did. Wow. Before we even read these, we were already taking your requests and knocking them down.
And by the way, if you have experiences on one of these apps, especially these voice apps, it's a little bit different from what we've noticed, or you have one of these working really well, we'd love to hear it, or you know, hear about how you're making it work. So do keep us updated and keep those suggestions coming for new apps.
And absolutely. If you have an MP3, if it's really short, send it to resources@serotalk.com. That's resources@serotalk.com, or contact us through Twitter so we can get it. And if you've done kind of a mini app review, or if you have a longer kind of submission that you'd like us to know about this, just let us know and we'll see if we can get that incorporated into the show. We had another tweet from Tina Byrabom, who wanted to say that she loved our first episode and she's looking forward to more. So We definitely encourage you to reply back to our tweets over at twitter.com/thatandroidshow.
Absolutely. We've been trying to do a good job also of keeping you up to date with the latest Android news as far as accessibility and everything else that's going on Android. So if you're looking for a good Twitter account to follow just to keep up with what's going on with Android, whether you're an Android user or an iOS user or just interested, it's a great Twitter account to follow, That Android Show.
Absolutely.
We also got in a couple of emails, and I want to say that we've gotten, like, again, some fantastic and incredibly long emails, so we won't read the entire email here out on the show. JJ, you want to take on a little bit of what we got in?
Yes, we received some quite thoughtful email from Mike Arrigo. I believe that's how you pronounce that. He is one of those Android power users, has used several different phones, the HTC Desire Z, the Cha-Cha, the Motorola Milestone 2. I love people with lots of phones and kind of who can compare things, and that's really cool. He suggests also that we interview Android users to talk about why they chose Android and what they do and don't like. That's a great idea, and something we'll definitely explore for the future. We'll get a little more of that up on thatandroidshow.com as well. Thank you so much for your emails, your iReports. You can go right into your iBlink radio app on your Android, which is accessible, absolutely, or iOS, and you can leave us an iReport there. Or you can go to thatandroidshow.com and contact us the old-fashioned way via email or via the Twitter, of course, at thatandroidshow. And we'll get your comments on for the next show.
So, you guys, I'm actually in the market for a phone, and I'm going to go to the Verizon store to talk to you guys about what phones I'm looking at, because my LG Ally, it no rumble no more. The rumbly thingy, it's all dead. And so,
Not to mention that started with 2.1. So I'm sure that didn't come in.
I'm on 15 months. So, I'm looking at, the Droid 3 and I'm looking at the Stratosphere. So for those of you who are out there using keyboard oriented phones, let me know what you think. And, let me know, it's not carrier specific, but I doubt I'm leaving Verizon, but I'm definitely going to go play with, the Droid 3, which Pete Bosley tells me is all plasticky. But I want to see the Stratosphere because it may be a lower processor, but it's one of the first 4G phones. So I'm going to go take a look at that. But my Ally was a good soldier, and I may have to put him to rest.
Oh, sad time, sad time. You can bet wherever that Galaxy Nexus shows up, there's rumors it might be on Verizon or Sprint, or who knows? There's rumors that for it being on every single carrier about this point. But wherever it is, I will be at whichever appropriate store that is, probably the day that it comes out, and definitely file a report and start playing with that phone, or whatever ice cream sandwich phone hits first. I will be at the store, and we will definitely get it out to you guys.
I am very excited about my upgrade. It comes up at the beginning of next year, probably in the spring. And so I cannot wait.
You guys are the responsible ones. I'm talking about breaking a contract already and so I can move to something else. I just bought mine in April, so I'm not waiting until 2013 for ice cream sandwich or whatever is beyond that. Is it Jelly Bean?
Jelly Bean. I think it's J. Yeah. K is Knish. I don't know. Well, we shall see. I think that's half the fun of it is learning what the new names are as they go. Because who ever would have thought of Froyo? I wouldn't have gotten that one. Eclair was cool.
So. But oh my gosh. So much fun to cover in this one. We didn't even get to half of it. And we'll have a lot more to cover on episode 3, God willing, in about a month's time or somewhere around there. We'll have a lot more to know, hopefully, about Ice Cream Sandwich at that point. Plus some interviews and more reaction as well. You can find me over on AndroidAccess.net. If you guys have app reviews you want to send in about what you're finding works for Android, do report them over on AndroidAccess.net to help out the community and help us out that way.
Stop by my blog, accessibleandroid.blogspot.com, for tutorials and other information on Android.
And you can follow me over at twitter.com/RangerStation, all one word. I tweet about all the stuff that we cover on our SBN shows. You can also hear me over at serotalk.com. And my personal favorite, EOL Show. That one's about geeky stuff, books, music, movies, and more. You can also follow that awesome Twitter feed at twitter.com/EOL Show.
So many great things going on for you to follow. We're coming into the holidays, so it's going to be some exciting times coming up for us and for Android. So thank you all for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.
Bye-bye.